The draft is on the way. The NFL schedule will be released today. And you may have heard Ben Roethlisberger has been in the news.
Yeah, a little.
We'll get to all of that and much more as we're pleased to welcome back the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
We're doing
good.
Well. Let's get through the Roethlisberger stuff, and then we'll get to some stuff that might be a little bit more fun. Where are you right now in the process of making a decision on punishment for Ben Roethlisberger?
Well, we're still going through the process of doing all the analysis and speaking to various parties, making sure that we've looked at all the material so we understand the facts. As you all know from following it, there are some disputed facts and there are some things that are conflicting, and we want to do the best we can to try to be fair and open and understand all of the facts as best as we can determine them.
Well, the schedule we know comes out today, and then Thursday, as the first time we're doing this, starting the draft on Thursday evening. So this week is pretty full. So how does all the activity this week affect the timing of your decision?
You know, we do have a busy week, but that's, you know, these are all priorities, and we'll work at it. As soon as we have a decision, we'll get to it and announce it. I'm a big believer we just got to keep moving and get things done, and we'll work all night if we have to get it done.
But if for some reason you come to a decision in the next couple of days, would you announce that decision, you know, while, you know, during the draft or the people talking about the schedule, or would you just wait at that point?
No, I think I would probably announce it. I think, you know, I've learned enough, Mike, in this business. When you've reached a decision, you need to communicate that to everybody and make sure everybody understands it. There are a lot of people that are interested, obviously, including all of our clubs and every player in the league and coach. So I think it's important for everyone to know when you've reached a conclusion and do it.
Mike, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, is with us. You mentioned that you're gathering all the information that you can. Who have you sought out for guidance and aid in making this decision?
Well, Mike, I'm not going to name any of them, but, you know, I have forgive the term, a kitchen cabinet, but a lot of people that I think have tremendous integrity and insight and well-balanced perspective. And I throw, you know, ideas at them, and they react to them. And certainly I do a lot of listening. And I listen to players. I listen to coaches. And all of them give me a good perspective.
Yeah, how much have you heard from them? There have been so many stories about external pressure that may exist on you with this decision. How much have you heard, for example, from the players on this topic?
Well, I've reached out to players. I try to get their input, and I've done that in every one of these decisions. So I seek out different viewpoints, and I think they're important to get. But I don't feel any more pressure on this than any other. You know, you're trying to affect behavior. You're trying to protect the integrity of the game and make sure that our fans understand that this is not an acceptable standard and make sure that people understand what the proper standard is.
You know, in the policy talks about, you know, obviously embarrassment to the league and such. Is there, and it's tough to decipher, but a guy like Ben Roethlisberger is going to get a whole lot more attention to the NFL than, you know, a backup lineman who may get in trouble. So does that sway where you need to go with the decision?
I don't think so. I think one of the things that you have to do, Mike, on this is you have to look at each guy individually and look at the circumstances individually to be fair. You also have to, and I think everybody in the NFL understands, that's the privilege of playing in the NFL. You have a privilege to play in this league, and you also have a responsibility. There are a lot of people that follow you. You're a role model whether you like it or not, and you have to conduct yourself with a high standard, and that's what I mean about protecting the shield and protecting the integrity of the game. You have a responsibility when you play in this league, and you have to live up to that standard.
Mike, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, one more on this, and that would be, you know, we've not heard a lot from Ben Roethlisberger publicly. You did get a chance to sit down with him. How satisfied were you after that discussion that he understands the significance, the seriousness of what's happened here?
Well, I guess you never accused me of not being direct, Mike, so yeah. I was pretty direct. But, you know, you also are trying to understand what's going on in their lives, what's impacting the decisions they're making, why are they making the judgments they make, and so you want to do a lot of listening. But I was very clear about my concern about the integrity of the game, the integrity of every player in the league, and the responsibility we have. And so I think he walked away with a very good understanding of how I feel.
And while many are speculating that whatever the punishment may be, if it turns out to be a suspension in however many games, that Ben would just accept that and understand if it came from you, the appeals process would go right back to you, accept it and try and move on. Could you say the same for the union, though, who are representing all players? What would you expect the union's reaction to be when you lay down your discipline? Do you think they will try to appeal it?
Well, I can't answer for them, but I've spoken to the Players Association. I've spoken to DeMarcus Smith, and I will continue to be in contact with him. I don't make these decisions in isolation. And I, as I say, and we've talked about it this morning, I look for different viewpoints and make sure I understand all of them and take that into consideration when I make a decision.
All right. Roger Goodell, who obviously, as we would be much happier talking about more fun and exciting things like the schedule, which will be released today. And certainly football fans everywhere are anticipating that. One of the big topics towards the end of the season, Commissioner, we talked about it with you, was, you know, in late season games when they were resting players, one of the potential solutions that came up was, well, maybe you schedule division games late in the season. There's a better chance of those being meaningful. So in advance of the schedule coming out, will we see anything there that may have been done to address some of those problems late in the year?
Yes, actually, Mike, we have. I think I said to you that we would push those divisional games into the final 3 weeks. We actually have 28 divisional games in those last 3 weeks as opposed to, I believe it's 15 for the 2009 season, and all 17 of the final week 17 games, excuse me, all 16 of the final week 17 games will be divisional games. So we have been able to move those divisional games in there. We'll see what the impact is as we go through the next season, but we think that's a positive development in keeping the integrity of the game in those late season games.
Yeah, that is certainly a step in that direction.
This just came up with the NBA as well, obviously.
Yeah.
And the one thing, very quickly, just to follow up on that, you know, David Stern, we had him on asking him, is there anything else you could do? And he said, frankly, this is a team decision. There's nothing else we could do. I know you had kicked around the idea of trying to take some other kind of action about those late season games. Did that ever get anywhere?
Well, I don't, you know, I don't give up easy. So I'm not willing to say that, you know, I'm going to walk away from this. I think, you know, we have a responsibility to our fans to put the highest quality product out on the field. And we have to create incentives to encourage our teams to do that. So, if this doesn't have the kind of impact we want, we're going to find three or four other things to try to have the same kind of outcome. So we'll continue to look at this, evaluate it, and try to come up with something that'll work here. But it is a difficult issue.
And staying on the scheduling, what is the progress, if any, on more games or the possibility of more games overseas in the regular season?
We will have our game in London this year. We will also have a game in Canada, a regular season game, and a preseason game with the Bills, both playing in both of those games. So we will just have the three games this year. We will not have any further games this year.
Mike, Roger Goodell, the commissioner, is with us. And as we mentioned, for the first time this year, the NFL draft goes to prime time Thursday night, 7:30 Eastern for the start, ESPN TV, ESPN Radio, et cetera. This is the biggest day, I think, in the league in its own way because every team is involved. What changes will fans see this year now that the event is going to the evening and that only one round will be on Thursday?
Well, we're not sure about all of the changes to the format because I think this is going to create a tremendous amount of excitement. I think there'll be additional strategic moves that the clubs will make because they now have, after the first round, you know, roughly 24 hours to evaluate their boards and make some changes, maybe even make trades. So there are a lot of things we're not sure will occur in this format, but it is exciting. The fans seem to be wrapping their arms around it. There's a tremendous amount of build-up for this. And I think putting it in prime time will give more people the opportunity to experience the excitement of the draft. And that's a positive thing for all of us and our partners, but most importantly, the fans.
Yeah, and that makes Thursday quicker in case you have anything to do after the draft.
But Mike Golic, who had to wait for 10 rounds
yes,
to be drafted back in 1984. Quickly, Commissioner, there is a story that came out overnight about a suit filed yesterday against a Colts player, Eric Foster, for alleged sexual assault against a female hotel employee the night before the AFC title game. I assume you've seen that. Do you have any reaction?
No, as usual, we will get all the facts and try to understand the circumstances before making either any statement or taking any action. But I think the first thing is to gather the facts.
Fair enough. Commissioner, we're certainly looking forward to it, and obviously the whole world will be watching closely, a whole bunch of things that you have going on this week. So best of luck, and we always appreciate the time.
We appreciate it, guys. Thanks for everything. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, you too. Roger Goodell, Commissioner of the NFL.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
The Professor John Clayton, who takes us inside the huddle. John will be part of ESPN Radio's team hosting the NFL draft prime time on Thursday night. Professor, you just heard our interview with the Commissioner Roger Goodell. What was your reaction to what he had to say as regards Ben Roethlisberger?
I think what you're looking at is probably going to be a four-game suspension that'll turn into a three. Maybe it'll be a four that'll turn into two. It'll be one that'll be based on, okay, here's the severity of the acts and the bad position you put yourself in the league by what you've done as far as your judgments. But if you at least are clean until the start of the season, we can reduce it. But I just think that with even though there was no charge in these two cases, you know, you can see that he's made bad judgments. It's certainly a violation of player conduct. And I think that what he wants to stress to both Ben Roethlisberger and the league, that it's not going to be tolerated. That's why I think it could be a four, but because of the severity, it could be shortened into a three.
Now, when the commissioner was on with us, he said he had spoken to DeMarcus Smith, the union head, about this. I guess even though they've spoken to him, would you still expect the union to get involved with this with some sort of appeal?
Well, I mean, I think they will if Ben asks for it. I don't think Ben's going to ask for it because, I mean, now in many ways they are offering, and I think the way it should go, offering the opportunity if he behaves to shorten it. And remember, so much of the player conduct policy came from DeMoris's players. You know, back when Gene Upshaw was the executive director, they're the ones that really pushed with Roger Goodell to try to come up with this player conduct policy. And so I think that, you know, as long as it doesn't go above four games, I think they'll all be on the same page. I mean, I think the one thing that you have to realize, too, is that Ben Roethlisberger probably does realize the mistakes that he made. You know, he's put his 28-year-old career in jeopardy by how he's handled himself, and I think the biggest thing that he must do now is first try to win back his teammates, win back the city of Pittsburgh, because they've turned on him, too. You know, even though, again, no charge, certainly a lot of people don't feel good about Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, right, Mike and Mike and John Clayton, we're getting a ton of messages like this one from David, who writes, I'm a Steelers season ticket holder and the father of three daughters. I have written two emails to the Steelers organization requesting they get rid of Ben Roethlisberger. I will never root for this guy again. He is an embarrassment to the city, the team, and the sport. I can't tell you how many of those we're getting. Now, again, this is April, and the season doesn't start until September, but with that much sentiment existing, John, is there any chance you see that Roethlisberger will not be on the Steelers when the season starts?
No, he'll be on the Steelers. I mean, he may be suspended for four going on three games, but I think that as long as he doesn't commit anything else or make any other mistake. I think that the message that they tried to get to Ben with the Santonio Holmes decision, three strikes, you're out. And, of course, that was three incidents involving Santonio. This is two involving Ben Roethlisberger. The next one is probably going to be the last one for Ben Roethlisberger in a Steeler uniform. So in many ways, you know, the Steelers' decision is pretty well set. They're not trading him unless there's a blockbuster trade, and there won't be. And, of course, the next one is probably going to lead to his exit.
All right, Mike and Mike, John Clayton, as far as quarterbacks are concerned, the NFL draft is coming up Thursday. There are several big quarterbacks in the draft: Sam Bradford, Jimmy Clausen, Colt McCoy, Tim Tebow. What are you hearing as of right this minute about the fate for those four guys?
Still think it hasn't really changed since the combine. Sam Bradford's going to go number one. The flux one is going to be Jimmy Clausen. Still outside chance of going to number seven to the Cleveland Browns. I don't think he's going to go to Buffalo, and if he falls, I think he could fall to 13 to San Francisco. I think that if the Browns do not take Jimmy Clausen, they could take Colt McCoy in the second round, and I think Buffalo is warming up to the idea of taking Tim Tebow. That could be as early as the second round. I think that the team that drafts Tim Tebow is going to be a team that has a coach pretty much making a lot of the personnel decisions, because one thing that Tim Tebow does appeal to is coaches because of his leadership.
All right. And then finally, before we let you go here, John, any other deals, any other wheeling and dealing we should expect either before Thursday or that will affect Thursday as the draft gets underway?
I don't think, I mean, again, there's always going to be dealing because, I mean, we've now seen 25 players move in pre-draft deals, and I think you still could see a few more. Yesterday's Ernie Sims deal came out of the blue. So I still think, but as far as affecting the draft, no. I think that it's still, because of the strength of this draft, not much as far as trades in the first 11 picks. I think the trades will start at 12 with teams maybe trying to move up from 20. But I think that this first round is not going to be as many trades as you can think. Second round, different deal. Lots of trades. That's the extra time being allowed to look at things and have the Friday night, one night after the first night of the draft.
And that first night you will hear John Clayton right here on ESPN Radio with coverage of the NFL draft. Thank you, Professor.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
There is never a bad time to talk about baseball, either the past of the game or the present of the game, with the legendary George Will, who joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. A new edition of his classic baseball book, Men at Work, is available right now with a brand new introduction. Mr. Will, good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
We're well. A couple of teams that we were expecting to be good. Let's talk about the game right now, and then we'll get some of your big picture thoughts. But a couple of teams that we expect to be good, including the Red Sox, off to terrible starts. If you were to counsel the fans of the Boston Red Sox, should they be in panic mode, or do you think they will be able to right the ship?
I think semi-panic mode is in order right now. The problem is they look old and unathletic. Baseball, partly because of the waning of the performance-enhancing drug era, baseball is becoming younger and more athletic. And that pretty much describes the Tampa Bay Rays, who I think are the best team in the league. There's going to be a time when Posada gets tired of crouching on, what, 37-year-old legs now?
Mm-hmm.
I think the so-called big two at the top of the division both look awfully slow and sluggish compared to these guys.
When can we decide that, you know, during the season where we're not saying, you know, it's early anymore and say this is really the team we have? I mean, you got to figure Boston's going to get better than what they are.
Oh, sure. They're going to get better, but Ortiz might not get better. And that's a big hole right in the middle of their lineup.
How about your beloved Cubbies? I remember the first time we had the privilege of meeting George Will was at the White House, and you walked up and you showed me your cell phone with the Cubs logo on it, which I still can't get over to this day. How about your beloved Cubbies? A loser last night against the Mets, not off to a very fast start. Expectations not all that high. What are yours for the year?
Well, I think the Cubs are three Cardinals injuries away from first place. But they have to be Carpenter, Wainwright, and Pujols. This will be an interesting day today because Zambrano, I believe, is pitching tonight against the Mets. And if Zambrano is an $18 million pitcher who won 9 games last year, Zambrano, who said it was absolutely certain this year he's going to control his temper, which he's, I guess he's 30, but it's about time to do that. If he does another bad outing, then the Cubs can go into panic mode.
George Will is with us here. He's good enough to write the foreword for our book, which we will always appreciate. All right, let's get into some of the big picture. I know you're on this special committee that the commissioner has formed.
By the way, Greeny's been trying to bump you off that committee so he can get out of the committee.
No. That is a total misstatement. I would like to join you.
If they said they're going to be a certain number, he said you'd be first to go.
So he can get out. Golic is making things up now. But anyway, a couple of the issues that have come up around the sport. Joe West, a longtime and oft-criticized umpire, recently complained loudly about the length of games, particularly when the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing. What is your view on the length of baseball games right now, and if something needs to be done, what should it be?
The problem is not the length of the game, it is the pace of the game. Fans don't mind a 2-hour and 52-minute game, and that, by the way, was the average length last year. They don't mind that if there's not dead time. The problem is the time between pitches, and particularly batters stepping in and out of the batter's box. John Miller told me that he has seen a kinescope of Game 7 of the 1953 World Series, tense game, Yankees-Dodgers, high stakes. Not one batter stepped out of the batter's box. They wanted to get dirt on their hands. They bent down in the batter's box. They wanted to check the signal from the third base coach. They turned around in the batter's box. So it's the dead time in the game that baseball is trying to get rid of.
Well, will they be able to? I mean, I know it seems some umpires are trying to do that, not giving timeouts to batters when they want them. But, you know, it's going to have to be a uniform thing, wouldn't it be?
It would, and the umpires, and I understand this, the umpires have enough on their plate, and they'd rather not have to police this.
What you need to do is change the whole customs and mores of the game, starting in the minor leagues and working up. After all, this fidgeting outside the batter's box is relatively new. Half of it, so far as I can tell, is adjusting their batting gloves. Well, Willie Mays and Babe Ruth and Joe DiMaggio had pretty good careers without batting gloves. So this is a modern phenomenon.
George Will, his great book is called Men at Work. It's available now, re-released with a brand new introduction that he has written. The other big subject lately, George, that's come up has been radical realignment, as we have talked more and more. There seems to be more conversation about the parity or lack thereof in payrolls and everything else. And the owner of the Milwaukee Brewers was talking at length about this. What I believe baseball has done as much as it probably can with revenue sharing. What other solutions could there be to trying to help the parity for some of the smaller market teams?
Well, you're right. There's not going to be a salary cap. The union is dead set against it. And revenue sharing has its limits. And the competitive balance tax at the high threshold hits very few teams. It is, however, the case that you could realign baseball in a way that would, doing it geographically, nevertheless put certain high-spending teams in the same division together where they could have mutually assured destruction. You could have, for example, in the Northeastern League, the Phillies, the Mets, the Yankees, the Red Sox. Now, the trouble is you need a fifth team, and that would look awfully like a sacrificial lamb, although that's probably not an insuperable problem. I can tell you that our committee has had one meeting together, three long conference calls, one of which was yesterday, and this subject has not yet come up. I expect it will come up. But when it comes up, I don't think you'll see talking about what's been called floating realignment, where ever so often, perhaps at the end of every year, you could have a shuffling of the divisions. That, I think, is a non-starter.
All right. And George, if you do need any help with this committee,
geez,
please call. I'm ready to go the second you need me.
Well, you can be the designated 15th player.
Okay. Or he could bring in the catering.
One way or another. Look, I never show up anywhere empty-handed. And you shouldn't either. Buy Men at Work if you want to hear or learn about baseball. No better place to do it. The book is called Men at Work, re-released with a brand new introduction by the great George Will. George, thank you so much, as always. We'll see you soon.
I enjoyed it. Good luck with your book.
Thanks, George.
There's the great George Will. Again, he was nice enough to write the foreword for ours.
You're listening to the best of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN Radio Pod Center.
Meanwhile, right now, Jason Stark with his weekly trivia question.
Since the Mets called up their newest phenom, Ike Davis, yesterday, here's a little Mets trivia. Since the arrival of their all-time phenom, Darryl Strawberry, in 1983, the Mets have only had two other players who hit 150 homers or more for them. Can you name them? Good luck.
All right, so we had a little bit of confusion.
Right.
Jason, you're not asking players the Mets brought up, just anyone who hit 150 home runs in a Mets uniform.
Right, since the arrival of Strawberry, since 1983. And I'm only asking you for two names.
Right, right.
Well, one of them is just about a gimme,
one,
right?
One of them has to be Mike Piazza.
I actually got the gimme, yeah.
Okay, so then the other one, I don't remember exactly in what order they came. Did Gary Carter come before or after Darryl Strawberry?
Let's see, he would have come right around the same period,
wouldn't
right?
Wouldn't he be the answer when Gary Carter didn't hit 150 home runs as a Met?
He did not.
All right, we were thinking of him. Did Keith Hernandez not hit 150 home runs as a Met?
Keith Hernandez is well before Darryl Strawberry.
He came. Oh, what year did he get there? I was trying to remember. He won the MVP in 79 in St. Louis. And what didn't he? Didn't was, am I? Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct. He and Willie Stargell, I believe, shared that MVP award in 79, and Keith Hernandez then became a Met. Oh, you are right, in 83, so right around the same time.
Around the same time. So those are the two names that jumped immediately to my mind. So obviously neither one of them is right.
No, Keith Hernandez is not really a big home run guy, as you know.
No, I know that, but I figured over the course of time, he might have hit up, over the course of 8 years, he might have hit 20 home runs. Okay. We're struggling with this.
Yeah,
one.
We are.
I noticed that.
I got mine. I got the gimme.
Well, Piazza was easy. I mean, I'm just thinking of guys who came through the team when they went to the World Series, had guys like Edgardo Alfonso and Robin Ventura on it, and those guys didn't hit 150 home runs as Mets. You look at some of the more recent guys. David Wright hasn't been there long enough to have hit 150 home runs. Jose Reyes certainly hasn't. Beltran, I don't think, has been there long enough. Delgado hasn't been there long enough.
Are we going to kick ourselves?
Is this a really easy one, or is this someone that we would
I wouldn't
not be
say it's an easy one, but you are going to kick yourself.
All right, just tell us, because we have a lot of things we want to get to today.
Well, I should tell you, David Wright's going to get there probably in the next, certainly by the All-Star break, but he's not the answer. The answer is Howard Johnson.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So it is going
all the way
back there.
It's got the hotel named after him.
Green, I figured you saw a lot of those Howard Johnson homers.
Yeah, Hojo.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. Okay, very good.
Well, another week down the drain.
It's hard to, well, we've never gotten this thing right, and I think if there's one thing we've shown is that we're never going to get this thing right.
No, we're not.
The Mets may have finally gotten something right after what has been just a dreadful start to their season, bringing up this kid, Ike Davis, who, you know, you'll hear his name in the conversation with Jason Hayward, these two young phenom players. He comes up and has a good night in his debut. Can he get that team going? Because, frankly, they have less offense than any team in the league.
Well, he's a jolt of energy, and they certainly need that energy. I don't think he's going to be Jason Hayward. He's probably closer to John Olerud, someone like that. But, you know, he has hit, and he's hit everywhere, and he was off to a great start in AAA. I guess the big question is, if they were so ready to release Mike Jacobs, which I think they were ready to do in spring training, and they didn't think Ike Davis was ready 2 weeks ago, why is he ready now? The Mets have a lot of issues like this where you have a hard time understanding why the thinking can change so radically 1 week from what it was the week before. Nevertheless, Ike Davis deepens their lineup, and they need that. They need as many talented big league players right now as they can put their hands on.
Are we, as far as the Red Sox and all the talk about them and the bad start, are we doom and glooming them for the year, or are we figuring, you know, these guys are going to eventually get to what the back of their cards say?
Well, you know, Mike, this clearly is not what they are. They're 26th in the major leagues in runs scored. They've scored two runs or fewer six times in 13 games. I don't see how you can think that this is the team they're going to be. Now, they don't have as much thunder as they've had. But, I mean, yesterday they rolled out a lineup with six players, right, or hitting under 220. And you just don't see that from the Red Sox. John Lester's going to win a game. They're going to get their act together. The question is, are they too far behind? They're six games out already in the East. They're 5.5 out in the wild card. You can't dig yourself a hole in the American League East and think you're going to fight your way out of it. The team that best exemplifies that is Tampa Bay, which did that last year and never recovered.
This year, the Rays have just finished a sweep of the Red Sox four games in Boston. They currently have the best record in baseball, Tampa Bay does. They did lose two out of three when the Yankees were in Tampa last week. But George Will this morning said it on our show. We've heard others say it. They think that right now Tampa Bay is the best team in Major League Baseball. Do you think so?
Well, they've got the best record in baseball. And, they have their flaws, but that's a team that scored the most runs in baseball. They've stolen the most, scored the most runs in the American League, stolen the most bases in baseball. They catch the ball and only made six errors all year. Their rotation has been great, even though I don't know how many people could name it. The two big questions about Tampa Bay, I think, are one, bullpen. There are a lot of outs that have to be gotten by pitchers that you're not too sure of in that bullpen. That's an issue. And then the other is, are they going to have the money to go out and address any issues that crop up? But we've talked about this a bunch of times. If you wrote down the lineups of the Rays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox, I'm not sure you wouldn't take the Rays lineup over the other two, and that's hard to believe.
Mike and Mike, Jason Stark, who joins us and humiliates us every Tuesday and has great stuff in his blog. He blogged the 20-inning game on Saturday night.
Right, right.
And here's just great stuff in here. The last team to score a tying run in the 19th inning of any game was a team that doesn't exist anymore. It was the 1969 Seattle Pilots. That's the kind of stuff
that
you get from Jason Stark pretty much every day on ESPN.com. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Ben.